brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, Josh. I'm not sure when we last talked on a podcast, but I think it was well over a year ago. Anyway, how are you doing?
Mate, it's been a long time, yeah. And I'm really happy that you asked me back on again, Matthew. It's been really good to catch up with you, mate, because I think it's been well overdue.
It is, yeah. I mean, there's a lot that's went on in the time between us last speaking that I wanted to catch up on with you about. I mean, one of the most notable things is your move into full-time miniature painting. So, I mean, that's obviously a big transition for you, isn't it?
Massive, yeah. It's been huge. It's been really wonderful. A really big positive life change for me in that, you know, I'm painting projects that maybe I have never done before, had the opportunity, never had the models, and just painting these wonderful armies and projects for people all around the world. So it's been fabulous, yeah.
How much do you, because I want to get into the podcast and stuff as well, like how much do you attribute that to having run the podcast for a few years now, the Crown of Command podcast?
Oh, massively. I mean, without the established podcast, without the name, and especially the YouTube channel, it just wouldn't have worked, because I think of all the customers I had initially when I first announced it, that they were all people who knew me through either I talked to them before, communicated, corresponded with them either through Messenger or Facebook or email or through the YouTube channel, and they all sort of approached me and saying, yeah, Josh, I really want you to paint this. Give me a quote on this army or this Blood Bowl team or whatever it might be. And it sort of really kicked off from there. And that's, you know, so all the work I'm doing really is established through the podcast or through Instagram or one of my other social networks through the Crown of Command.
Looking back at the podcast now, I mean, you started the Crown of Command. Was it? Am I right in saying it was a pre-pandemic project, wasn't it? Or am I? I'm trying to think of my timeline.
It actually started in 2020,
right?
May. I was just thinking about the other day. It's coming up to 4 years now that we've started it, and I'm actually inviting the first guest that I had on, which is Dave, who set up our Discord. He's going to come back in May to celebrate 4 years of the podcast so far, which is amazing.
Yeah, congratulations on that. Yes, it's come on leaps and bounds. Like, I remember I was listening to it pretty early on when you started. I honestly can't remember how I discovered it, but I mean, you could tell that you were finding your feet in the early days. Like, the conversations were good, but I do remember, like, the audio, you know, it was sketchy at times, and you know, I thought, like, I'm going to stick by this because, like, I like the conversations, but, like, it's just improved so much over the years. So what was it like in the early days trying to, I mean, there was obviously a few, like, technical hurdles to overcome and stuff like that.
Oh, mate, look, I had no idea. Like, technically minded, I'm not, okay, as Yoda would say. So basically computers, anything to do with podcasts, anything, you know, to do with technology, I have very little knowledge on. I'm very much an analog guy. So when I launched the podcast through the help of my sister sent me a link to say try Anchor FM, because Anchor FM at that stage was a free platform, which still is. It's through Spotify now. They've merged together. And I started off with that and I didn't have a microphone. So I used my PS4 headset. It's like a little earbud and you've got like a little microphone at the end. And I would record directly straight through the Anchor FM application. So it was really rough going. I really feel sorry for anybody who had to put up with all that really bad audio and bad everything. But hopefully the guests themselves were interesting, and that's the main thing. So progressively it's gotten better and better. I've also got a new microphone. I've learned a lot about things, as you would have done too, mate. And I know you're a sound engineer, so you know a lot about this stuff. But then picking up little bits and pieces as you go along and try to improve. And now that I have patrons and that kind of thing that are obviously paying me because of my content, I really want to make sure the content's really good and good quality, and it's like listenable. So yeah, I've learned a lot over the last 4 years, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, in my experience, like I've been podcasting for about 15 years, and you know, it's a big part of my job as well. And one thing you learn, well, a couple of things you learn over time, there's no substitute for experience. So even though the early days are difficult when you start new content, there's nothing else to do but just get on with it and learn and make mistakes. You know, you could do all the tutorials, do all the courses in the world, but actually just doing it is where you really learn. And the other thing is, like, Josh, I nearly had to cancel this recording because I'm having serious audio issues of my own. And like I say, I've been doing this 15 years, so you never get to a stage where you're above all that. Like, I kind of had to botch a setup together. Touch wood, it seems to be working so far, but you're never, technical trouble's never far away. Like, you're never going to be immune from it, so...
Yeah, no, I can totally appreciate that. I know your setup is much more grander, and you know it's really for. And as you say, you've been doing it for 15 years, so you know your stuff. You know you know your equipment, and you've invested in it very wisely, and it's part of your job, and that's wonderful. I've had to learn the hard way and what's good, what's not good, and stick to something that's really basic for me. You know, like I just do it through Zoom. It seems mostly 99% of the time quite stable. I edit everything through iMovie, funnily enough, even though it's like an audio thing. But I just found a pattern that just, you know, makes me comfortable with doing things, because I've tried other things like Audacity and other programs, GarageBand and that kind of thing. I just found it's just too out of my depth. I just don't know much about those programs. So yeah, I mean, I give my, you know, hats off to people who can really do it well and succeed in podcasting. It's quite a challenge. Yeah, audio. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about like the tools that you use and stuff, and I do, you know, been asked over the years, like, what is the best? You know, what's the best software? What's the best mic, etc. And there's rarely an answer, you know, a right answer for everyone. It's often just like, well, what works for you? What helps you? You know, what are you most comfortable with? What helps you keep getting the podcast out? That is the best setup for you, no matter how that looks. You have obviously ventured into YouTube and video. Like, I mean, you're talking about being not technical in that, but your videos, like, they have an excellent level of production. So what's the deal there?
Oh, mate, that's, again, a massive learning curve. I mean, if you could see my very first videos I ever did, they were terrible. They were shocking. But people watch them, and that's the quite funny thing about it. But I had to learn a lot, and to be honest, I really enjoy making videos. I don't say that as just, you know, offhand. It's just like I really enjoyed the process, the learning about it. I enjoyed watching other people's videos and how they did it, and, you know, learning things from them. And it's been a really nice journey going through that. Again, for about 4 or 5 years, I think, when it first started as Section 9 Studios. It wasn't called Krana Command back then. I did a lot of Song of Ice and Fire painting tutorials. And, yeah, when I look back on those, and if I haven't deleted them already, but the really early ones, I can see that I made a lot of mistakes in editing and that kind of thing. But that's okay. It's all part of the process. It's all part of learning. And if anything, over the last 4 years, I've got some new skills, you know, video editing, a little bit of podcasting, and I've got that experience behind me now. So that's been really good, and people have enjoyed it. So that's, again, another bonus that keeps you motivated, keeps you going.
When you started the podcast, I mean, obviously, we've mentioned it here, and we'll get more into it about the transition to becoming a full-time commissioned painter. But when you started the show and started putting out content, was there a point where you realised, like, this stuff is really starting to resonate with, you know, not an insignificant amount of people?
Yeah, I think with YouTube, it's easy to gauge that, because you can see by views, you can see by comments and feedback and that kind of thing. The podcasting side is very much in the dark. I don't really know much about that as to how many people are listening, and, you know, the level of engagement is very, very limited. YouTube provides me a great platform where people can communicate with me in various different ways, either comments on the videos, in the community section. So I'm always relaying back, you know, how they feel about certain things, or I can post up pictures of my miniatures and get feedback off that. So actually, YouTube's been a really fantastic platform for me, to be honest, in getting my work out there, getting my name out there, and then at the same time, potentially picking up people who want to have commissions done and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, YouTube, it seems to excel in the discovery, like people finding your stuff. Like I think that route works really well, or can work really well for podcasters, especially if you're creating obviously really good video. Like I am publishing to YouTube, but it literally is just an automated, like it's just the audio and it shows the cover art. So it's not really a video, it's just there. I don't get much views at all on there, and I'm fine with that. But in terms of the podcast as well, obviously you're pushing a podcast out to platforms that half of them you've never even heard of before. And that's a great thing because it makes it available in so many places. But like you're saying, it then becomes trickier to measure the performance just beyond like what are the download numbers. You can get decent sample sizes or decent sample data if you log into your Spotify portal or your Apple portal. Obviously that's very specific to that platform, but you can look at things like, you know, completion rates of episodes and stuff. I am guilty of just not paying attention to that stuff at all, but it can be done. It can be done if folks are interested.
I think the most interesting thing for me is not the downloads, but the rankings. It's got like country by country on Spotify anyway. You can see the rankings. I think US is number one, UK is number two, Australia is number three, I think, in the rankings. So go Australia. Keep more listeners in Australia. I know that Australia is such a small country in comparison to the bigger countries out there, but we always find a massive amount of people who are interested in tabletop miniature gaming. I don't know why. There's such a huge affiliation with Australia and tabletop wargaming, but there is, and it's always nice to see that a lot of Aussies are listening to the show.
Going back to your career transition, and I mean, I know you literally were a full-time painter back in the day as well, but what was the thought process when you started to realise, like, I could make a go of this full-time now? How did that kind of pan out?
Well, it kind of didn't in the early, there was no idea of me doing miniature painting when I basically quit my job. What was happening was I'd been working in an Ekaiwa, which is basically a conversation school in Japan, for 9 years. I had a really good relationship with my boss and the staff there, and everything was fine. It was just the hours were just really, you know, I've been working for 9 years, starting at like 1 o'clock until 10 o'clock at night. It was like a 2-hour commute. It just started weighing me down, like the hours that I was spending there and not at home and that kind of thing. So I just needed a change. And I had another company that was basically going to take me on as another teacher at a school. And I was really looking forward to that, the prospect of working through the day, not at night, and then, you know, coming home and having long holidays and that kind of thing. But unfortunately, that fell through. So when that fell through, you know, my world started really started breaking up and shattering to small pieces. I felt really as to what was going to do, how I was going to support my family and all that kind of thing. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go for this commission painting thing because that's the only thing I've got left that I can do, that if I can't teach, because Japan has a very, very tight window on employment, like, you know, gaining new recruits and that kind of thing. The employment drive is through the early part of the year and mid through the year. So I basically had like a 6-month gap where there was no income coming in. So I thought, okay, let's get the feelers out. Let's put out some posts on my YouTube or on my podcast that said I'm going to be a full-time commission painter. Please send your quotes through. And luckily I had a big influx of people wanting to get stuff painted, which was wonderful. It just happened at the right time. So, and that sort of started things off, and that was in June. I think it was April, May 2023 when it really sort of started. And I've been busy ever since then, up until now.
How is it logistically living in Japan? Is that a decent sized barrier for getting and sending miniatures to people?
That's a really good question. And obviously I don't live in the best part of the world in order to be a commission painter. If I had to choose one country, I think the US would be the best place, or Europe, because that's where the majority of people are, and you know, it's just easier logistically to get miniatures to and from myself to them. But we've worked out ways of getting it done, and I think people who want to invest in me as a painter to paint their projects, they're willing to make that initial sacrifice of paying the shipping and back and that kind of thing as well. So I think if you're going to get something commission painted, you are looking at a certain financial investment and me doing that. And the postage is just, you know, very minor in comparison to the actual project cost itself. So yeah, I've been very happy about that. I try to give people concessions here and there. Maybe do like a free banner or a set of banners, or assemble things for free if I can. So I just try to get them some kind of satisfaction in terms of I can, you know, if you pay the shipping here and tax imports or whatever, I'll do this for you kind of thing. So yeah, we try to work something out.
How is it? Painting loads of other people's miniatures affected your own hobby then?
That's another really good question. It's funny because now that it's my job and, you know, I don't paint as much as I used to. Like for myself, I used to paint a lot. You know, I used to go through armies like there's no tomorrow. Now my personal painting progress has slowed down to a snail's pace. But I don't feel dissatisfied with painting other people's things. I get really excited about it, to be honest. So when I got like the undead commission from David in the US, that was an amazing project to work on. You know, I've never painted undead before. Now, all those classic Gary Morley models from the 90s, I love doing that. And, you know, Carnifex's Gene Stealer Cold Army, his Slaanesh Chaos Army for 40K, they were beautiful projects to work on. You know, Tim Baxter's Eldar Phoenix Lords, probably one of my favorite commissions to work on. So every single commission I get, I really enjoy doing it because it's something new. It's something that I haven't had the opportunity to paint before. And I, you know, obviously my painting suffers for myself personally, but I still get a really great amount of satisfaction in painting other people's things.
Are you able to use those projects and double up with the content creation then, like create some videos around those projects as you're painting them?
I try to if I can. Usually I'm under a really tight schedule. So I missed the opportunity of doing stuff for both Tim and both Carnifex. I did some stuff for David where I did some of the white characters and painting undead skeletons and that kind of thing. So I try to fit them in when I can, but as you know, if anybody who's into video production, it takes a lot of time that you're not going to, you know, time is now money for me. So, you know, investing that time into a video has to be done, you know, with a lot of thought behind it and make sure I manage my time effectively so that I'm not sort of taking time away from my job. So that's very, very important because, you know, If I paint an army, just to give you some kind of idea of what that's about. So David's army took me 2 months to paint. So that's a massive undead army. It's like a two-month contract kind of thing. So that gives you kind of an idea of, you know, the speed and the amount of work I do, you know, in terms of week to week, day to day, that kind of thing. So in terms of making videos around the projects that I'm painting, it might just depend on how effective that could be time wise.
How much hours can you realistically put in one day? Because obviously, if you're self employed, you know you could dedicate a lot of time to this. But is there a certain amount of hours after painting an army where you just need to stop and, you know, have a break or call it quits for the day?
Usually when my bum hurts, I'm sitting on this chair. So I sit a lot in this chair. I love my painting room. I think anybody who has a painting room, their own sort of man cave, personal space, is a very lucky person. I know some people don't have that particular privilege. So I love being here. I love being surrounded by models and miniatures and paints and game stuff, books, you know, you name it. You know my room, mate. You can see it around here. It's like this is full of stuff. So I spend a lot of time sitting here. When I paint and when I work, I usually, you know, after taking my son to school, come back about 8:15 or so, usually hit the paints about 8:30, and I might paint until, you know, 6 or 8 o'clock at night. So it could be a 12-hour day. It really depends on the project. It depends on, you know, my deadlines and, you know, because a payment is a big thing for me too, like, you know, having to get paid every month. So it might mean that I have to make like time sacrifices and say, okay, I need to work 12 hours a day for the next 7 days just to push out this project so I get paid on time, they get their miniatures back in time, and you know, everyone's laughing kind of thing. So it really depends, mate. But I can paint here all day, every day, for hours and hours on end. So, yeah.
Of course, like the act of painting other folks' miniatures isn't the only wing of your business, is it? Because you've been doing painting lessons as well, which I've heard really good things about. Did the painting lessons come before the commissioned painting, or what's the deal there?
I think they came through, like when I started Everled Studios, I wanted to find different, like as a self-employed person, you're trying to find different avenues of increasing your revenue. So I thought, well, maybe painting commissions are not within everyone's budget, and also people like to paint their own miniatures. So, and I really like teaching because I teach English here in Japan. I've done for a while. I'm still doing that on the side as a side gig, but I really wanted to teach people how to paint miniatures, and I find that very satisfying more than teaching English, to be honest. So I started that I don't know, last year sometime, maybe during the summer. I had a few people come on, I had a few people email me and say, "Hey Josh, I saw your High Elf showcase video, and I really want to paint High Elves just like you did on your army. You know, can we have some kind of painting lesson?" I think maybe that's how it all started. And I thought, okay, well, I can try doing that. I've never done it before, and I can do it remotely, so we don't need to meet up in person or anything like that. I can just do it over the internet. So I started doing that through Discord and through a special application from my phone, so they could see what I was doing and how I was painting it. The lessons would be about an hour long, and I'd record those lessons and edit them and send it to the person. So even though they may not remember everything during that hour, they would have that backup lesson stored away as a video file that they could always go back to and say, okay, this is how I paint white, or this is how I do freehand on barding, or whatever it might be. So I did that for a while until December. Then I quit it, and then I just wanted to reformat and restructure the whole thing to make it a little bit easier on me, and because of time-wise and that kind of thing. So I've restructured it, relaunched it as the Heavy Metal Masterclass now on my Patreon. And I'm very thankful that Mark has joined me for the first lesson this year. And we started going over some things like painting black. So that's now a 40-minute lesson that's also recorded. I tried it through Zoom, but I think I might go back to Discord. I like the visuals better. But it's nice because I had George last year as well, and I had a few other guys as well. It's a great social thing as well, because we get to talk and you know, chat about different things, about life or hobby or whatever. And it's a really nice way to meet up with people and learn about them and make some friendships along the way. So it's been really good so far.
With the painting lessons, do you notice any common things that you maybe are able to pick up and correct quickly, like some low-hanging fruits for just getting folks that sort of early win with their painting?
I think a lot of them is just tips, because you know, things like painting yellows or things like whites and that kind of thing, it's always been a struggle with people. So if I give them some kind of quick hack, like a painting hack, and say, well, you don't have to worry about, you know, this doing that, doing all these really complex processes, it's just as easy as just picking this color and matching it with this color, and away you go. And once they visually see that and you're doing it, they go, wow, that's so much easier than I thought it was. You know what I mean? So that, and I love that kind of, the feeling for me is that, you know, they're really happy. They say, thanks, Josh, that saved me so much time. You know, I really appreciate, you know, your time today would teach me that and that kind of thing. So those kind of breakthroughs with people where they find that this process was, you know, going to be part of their big project, like a Bad Moon's army and painting all that yellow. And now they find it's not such a difficult process because of that simple one or two sentences. You know, that's all it took, and away they go. So they get that little string of inspiration, and once they can unlock that really hard painting process, they're away and practicing, and off they go.
If you're in the market for a t-shirt, mug, sticker, or magnet with Goblin Green bases written on it, then today is your lucky day. We've teamed up with TeePublic to create a merch store for the podcast, which you could visit by going to bedroombattlefields.com/store. So go and get yourself some Goblin Green Bases branded merch today, and bonus points if you send in a photo of you being escorted out of your local games workshop. That's bedroombattlefields.com/store. And now, back to the show. Do people tend to do multiple lessons, or do you get folks that just need that one lesson to get them on their way?
Okay, so this is why I had to restructure it, because last year was my first time doing it. And then I thought about it in more in I was conflicted as to how I was going to approach it. I thought maybe I'll just do videos just based on miniatures I was painting and release them as short clips. And then I thought, no, I'll get the guys to give me the lessons they want to paint, and I'll paint those for them. But I thought, time-wise, it's impossible. I couldn't do it. So I thought, how can I do this better? So what I did was I basically allowed the patron to email me first, give me a set of guidelines of what they wanted to paint, what they wanted to learn, and then we could then structure that into X amount of lessons. So, for example, one person might say, look, I just need to learn these three things. So it's basically three lessons, and then we're done. The beauty of Patreon is that it's not a contractual thing. It's basically you enter Patreon, you support the creator for as long as you need to, and then you can back out at any time. So it's like Netflix. It's like all those kind of subscription service nowadays. You can just cancel any time. So once we have a general structure of what they want to learn and the time frame within that, at the end of that particular time frame, they might say, hey, Josh, thank you very much for lessons. I think I'm going to just bump down to being like a normal Storm Boy, regular patron, or jump out altogether. That's fine. It's completely up to them. Or they might say, hey, I've got another project I need to learn about how to paint, certain metallics or non-metallics or whatever. Can I get another couple lessons? And that's fine. It's very flexible like that.
So do people have to go through the Patreon, or can they just get in touch with you and pay you directly for a block of time?
People have asked me about that. I don't see why there's any problem at all if they want to pay me outside of Patreon. I think a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about Patreon. And honestly, Patreon has been great for me. I mean, they've handled everything. They've given me a platform in order for people to meet, for people to access or find me a lot easier than if I wasn't on there. And their personal takings is very, very low. Their percentage is very, very low. So, yeah, I really like Patreon. We've got a community section now where people in my Patreon are showing figures they're painting. We can communicate and share stuff they're working on, which is really good. I hope that grows over time. And we're going to try to incorporate that into Discord, where we have just like a Patreon channel where we can just sit and paint and talk once a month or something like that. Have a bit of a hobby hangout. So, but if people want to do that outside of Patreon, that's fine. Totally fine. I can certainly schedule that. No problem.
I did set up a Patreon ages ago for my show.
The worst Patreon ever.
Yeah, exactly. I thought, I'm not doing any extra for it. I'm only going to make it available there because if now and then I could afford like a beer, that'll be good. And if not, I don't really care. So, but I don't do anything at all extra. Do you find like, because I know that folks run Patreons in all sorts of different ways, and you do get some people who do spend a lot of time on that bonus content. And I'm always curious, when people support a creator on Patreon, how much of that is to do, and obviously you've got great value with your lessons and stuff like that, but if it's just bonus content people are getting, I'm often curious if people are really paying for that, or if they're just paying because they like what the creator does in the main and just want to support them. But I mean you've obviously got real value in there with the lessons and that, so I'd imagine that does make it easier to get patrons as well.
Yes, that's true. I'm actually looking at your Patreon right now, actually, mate, Matthew. So, and I tried to join it, but it says there's an error.
that's why I'm scant.
You got an error 500 or whatever, or 501 or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, Patreon has been there for a long time. It's supporting creators that don't have the or need the financial support if they're doing it full time, and they're creating something that people feel that they're worth the investment in. And like you say, they want to buy your beer each month. That's great. And that's wonderful. I've actually learned, you know, I don't get to communicate a lot with my patrons. Unfortunately, it's not the best way to communicate with people. I think Discord is a much easier way, or YouTube or Messenger or something like that. But it's been really nice to know, you know, people that have been there since the beginning, you know, and that's been wonderful to, you know, build relationships with people all around the world, whether it be in Spain, Denmark, you know, Sweden, the UK, Australia, America, Canada, you know, all along the way. So it's been really great to have that. And I'm still in contact with those people today, which is fantastic. You know, it's kind of like a little family, extended family, you know, which is really nice. So I'll have to try getting onto your Patreon again. At first it was in German. I don't know why. I had to translate it back to English. But then I got an error, so I'll have to check it out. But like, as I'm going to say, just for you, your Patreon and anybody's Patreon, you can join for free. It costs you nothing. You can become a free member, check out their content. And if you look at Matthew's Bedroom Battlefields one, you think, oh, well, you know, Matthew's a good guy. I like the podcast he's doing each month or whatever. And I can become a free member and check out some of his free content and then jump in for like $1 a month or whatever it is that you have on there. So, yeah, I think there's some kind of people feel a little bit scared, or, you know, they just don't want to take that final step of joining something they think they're going to have to pay a lot of money for, which is really not the case at all. I think people should just try it. So, yeah, if I can, on Matthew's behalf, go and check out his Patreon, become a free member, and give him $1 a month if you can, and help him along his way.
Thanks, Josh. Right enough, it is broken, so I don't know, I don't know how they'll get on with that. But I guess I'll have to have a look at that at some point.
You got some Germans in the network there, mate.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
The espionage.
Another big byproduct to the content that you've created over the years is just the size and depth of your communities now. I mean, I'm not on Facebook myself, but from what I understand, there's a Facebook group, and then I'm in your Discord, which is really active and loads of folk in there. So how is that all for you these days, and trying to keep up all that, if you do at all?
Mate, Facebook's been really hard for me to keep up with, and I've assigned, you know, moderation to a couple of guys I know who probably use it more than I do. I find social media just really distracting. I don't know if you feel the same. I just feel like, oh my God, that's like half an hour I spent wasted just looking on social media when I could have been done something productive and meaningful. So I try to limit my time on the social networks as much as possible. I'll just quickly dip in, check it, and then dip straight back out. So Discord's probably the place I stay in the most, because we have a paint and chat section. I know your Discord does the same, and I have to jump in there at some point and say hello to the guys, because I know that, you know, a lot of your guys in your channel are part of our channel too. We sort of integrated that way. So I need to go in there and have a look, because it's nice just to sit there and paint and chat at the same time, and you're engaged with social media, but not to the level where you're being distracted. You know what I mean? So you can sit there and talk to somebody, you know, establish a relationship with somebody from some other part of the world, you know, paint miniatures, talk about hobby and have a good time, but then you're not sort of sinking and wasting time looking at endless pictures or whatever on other social media. So yeah, Discord's probably the favored place of me. There's no advertising, there's nothing, you know, it's just your space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I use Discord, to be honest, I don't know rightly or wrongly, but I don't even refer to it as social media. I know it is kind of. And I only have it on my computer as well, so I don't have that on my phone, which means if I am on the computer, I could go in there and be a bit more deliberate and spend a bit more time rather than just a cursory glance. You maybe see something that you want to go back to later and you forget and stuff like that. I do have like ancient, I think there's an ancient Twitter account and Instagram account for probably just my website before it was a podcast, but I've never been onto them for a long time either. And although the benefits of that are almost all positive. There are times where it's awkward for me. I think I had to bother you once to reach out to somebody on my behalf, because people, like, you can't find an email address for them. Like, it's only like, oh, get them through Instagram or whatever. And I wouldn't even know the password for my Instagram now. So I just, there's some folks I could see an account for them, and I'm like, I just have no way of reaching out to them. So it could be a bit annoying on that front.
I know exactly how you feel, mate, and I feel kind of the same. I think you just got to stick to the platforms that, you know, that you feel comfortable with. And I think Discord is a really, you know, your Discord is a really growing and really good place. Great guys, good conversations, you know, no hassles. It's just all positivity, and that's a really good place to be in. So I think, you know, if that works for you, that's fine. I think people will just find you. I think just word of mouth. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, someone says to their mates at their game club or at work or whatever, oh, have you listened to, you know, Bedroom Battlefields, you know. And I think that helps enormously. I don't feel like sharing on Facebook does a great amount of, you know, doesn't do anything massively extra. I think it has to be from the community itself saying, yeah, you know, check out this podcast or check out this Discord or whatever. And people will follow. But yeah, I think YouTube is definitely a big attractor, far more than Facebook or anything like that. So I don't know. I think you just find the social media spaces where you feel comfortable, you know, sharing stuff or doing stuff or investing time in, and leave the rest.
Talk to us about some of the latest episodes that you've done on the podcast, because I've noticed there have been wee projects and ventures that have really caught your eye recently. So could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a couple of things. One is that I've discovered live streaming again, and live streaming in the form of interviewing people, like previous guests. I'll have to get you on too, Matthew, at some point. Get on the live stream, mate. And get you bedroom battlefields guys in there as well in the chat, because it's been a really nice way to have an interactive podcast, as it were, you know. So people can join in, they can ask questions, they can, you know, they can natter and chatter in the chat box and that kind of thing. So that's been really good. I've been really liking that and doing that weekly, if I can, with different people. I think this weekend I've got Moshe from Germany. I think Andreas. He might be part of your Discord as well, but he's part of the Crown Command. So I'm inviting different guests that I like chatting to with that, and with the Crown Command. It's been a bit of a mix. Like since late last year, I felt a bit bad about not supporting some really good companies out there, because, you know, in the nature of our hobby, and maybe it's different for you, Matthew, but like, you know, we in the Creator Command, we're sort of like, you know, trading within our community, within our group. So it's like, you know, I need these guys from 1992. Do you have them? Yeah, I got them, you know, and we do our transactions that way. So we're not really actively, well, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know about other people, but I'm not actively going out and buying stuff from, you know, small companies. So that really sort of preyed on my mind a lot. And I thought, I really want to be more active within the current stuff. You know, I like the old stuff, but there's a lot of current stuff I really enjoy too. So that's when I got my eyes turned onto Footsore Miniatures and Baron's War. And I've been looking at that for such a long time. I thought, that's it. I'm going to put my money on there and grab some stuff. And then I met Paul Hicks, the sculptor behind that range, and Andy Hobday, who's one of the co-founders of Footsore. And yeah, sort of established a bit of a connection there, a bit of correspondence, and got them on the show. Well, I got Paul Hicks on the show, which I really enjoyed. And that sort of brought a new – because everyone's connected with Games Workshop in some way at some point. So Andy Hobday was a former red shirt at Games Workshop, then worked in IT for a very long time before moving on to other things. I think Warlord Games was his next step. And Paul Hicks too worked for Games Workshop as a red shirt, worked as a manager in Oxford Street store. So everybody has their connections. Even you, Matthew, you have your connections through Games Workshop at some point. And all the guests I bring on, whether they're like, you know, involved in Games Workshop back then, now, or moved on to other things, we all have our, you know, our lineage back into the glory days of Games Workshop in the 90s. So it's been really interesting getting and, you know, bringing on people like that to bring their perspective of how they established themselves into the community, in the hobby, and then turn that into some kind of live career, which is really cool to hear that. It's still progressing. I've still got people lined up to go on the podcast, which is great, which I'm really excited about. I've got a Games Workshop editor from White Dwarf coming on, I think, tomorrow. I interview him tomorrow, so I'm really excited about that. I think it's tomorrow or what's today? Tuesday? Yeah, maybe Thursday, I think it might be. But, really excited about that. So, yeah, it's just about, trying to find guests that are willing to come onto a podcast and then talk. So you need the combination of the two, people who are willing and then who can talk a lot. It's always great to meet up with different people, establish new connections as well, and hopefully keep that going,
Have you painted any of your Barons War guys yet?
I have. I absolutely love those models, mate. I've been looking at those. I've been just like obsessed with it. Obsessed. I think I talked to Paul about it. Just been obsessed looking at those photos on that website. And it's one of those things I just had to get. I had to paint them. So I got that out of my system. I've ordered some more bits and pieces from them, and that should come soon. And I eventually want to get it onto the table and play it and then record sort of like narrative battles of Baron's War at some stage. I'm really looking at the Death and Taxes section, which is basically Robin Hood and Sherwood Forest. We've got the Sheriff of Nottingham, and you've got Robin Hood and, Maid Marian and all those guys, all the characters. And he does such a beautiful job, Paul, at recreating those miniatures. That's been on my radar as well, as in terms of like new stuff out there, which is a bit of a departure, a bit of a change, but it's still all connected to Games Workshop in some way. It's all traditional sculpting. It's all, the good stuff. It's all sort of old school gaming.
Have you still managed to get in the odd game now and then since your career change?
Yeah, probably more than ever, because my time's flexible now. I can say, okay, let's have a game on Monday, and I'm very fortunate for where I live, because you would associate Japan with not that much of a tabletop wargaming history or as a social hobby. But I know a few guys like Nick and Justin. Justin unfortunately left to go to Hong Kong now, but I've got Paul here as well, and Wellington and a few other guys as well, that we get together and play games. So they would come up to my place and we would play a game, and I'll record it here mostly. And then I've got Paul, who lives not so far away, a friend of mine, who we play games either on the channel or just hang out and play Blood Bowl or whatever it might be, just hang out and have some fun, roll some dice. So my gaming has definitely I play in tournaments as well in Japan as well. Got another one coming up on the 24th this month, playing Warhammer Renaissance, which I'm really looking forward to. So yeah, we've got a really good solid active group of people playing stuff, which is great.
Have you ever ventured out into any of the non-GW games to try out?
I've got A Song of Ice and Fire, which I got as a Kickstarter back in, I think, 2019. And that's basically what started my YouTube channel, because it was called Section 9 Studios. And I was actively painting all the Stark heroes from that set, because it was something new and no one had done it before. And I thought, I'll have a go at making painting videos and see what I can do. I think I tried it many, many years ago, but I had sort of memories of my mum and my sister laughing their ass off watching me on the TV. Like, I think I recorded something on a digital camera and I put it through my PlayStation so they could watch it, and they're just laughing their ass off, because they thought it was funny, because it's my mum and my sister, So I had trepidations about doing it, because I thought, hey, is this going to be like really funny? Is it going to be like a joke to people, or is this going to people going to take this seriously? So I thought I'd have a go at it. So I did try. Yeah, I've painted stuff for A Song of Ice and Fire. Played the game, really like that. Other things, A Confrontation, which I've not really played a lot of, but I really enjoyed painting and collecting the models for, and miniatures. And now I've got a decent. And Paul plays that with me too. Confrontation and Hybrid, which are really good games. Apart from that, I can't really think of anything else. Maybe board games from occasion, but not very often. But I've always got my finger on the pulse of new stuff out there. It's just very it's just, you know, it's almost never that I actually dip into something. You know, it's just looking and not really engaging with it any further. It takes a very special combination to get me into something, I think.
Josh, it's been brilliant to catch up with you again. As we come round towards the end of our chat, is there anywhere you would like to send a listener, anywhere they could go to check out where they might get painting lessons or commission paints or anything like that?
Yeah, so if you can drop a link in your show note description, if you are interested in the painting commissions, either painting commissions or the painting lessons, you can always contact me at evyled@gmail.com, and I think Matthew will be kind enough to put that in the show notes. You can always reach out to me and say, hey, you know, I'm interested in those painting lessons. Tell me more about it. I'll give you all the information you need, and we can talk about that. I usually have some kind of Zoom conference as well with people, a quick chat, you know, just talk about what you want to do, you know, what's your expectations, what's your skill level, and that kind of thing. So we can work around something that's a plan suitable for you, that's manageable for you. We do it once a month, so there's no pressure. You've got plenty of time to practice and that kind of thing. So, yeah, ebbyled@gmail.com is my best contact for that. Otherwise, if you're just wanting to look at the videos and see me paint and that kind of thing, head over to my YouTube channel at Crown of Command Games, and you've got lots of ebbyled videos of painting videos on there you can check out. Discord would be great if you can come along and say hello and join Matthew's as well. That'd be really nice. And the Facebook group, or my ebbyled Facebook. There's so many. There's Instagram, and I can give you a whole heap of links and not bore you with all that, but you can just leave it there and they can check it out at their leisure.
Yeah, I'll try my best to put links in the show notes, bearing in mind so that I can't even link to my own Patreon, evidently. So that's obviously beyond me.
So I'm going to keep trying, man. I'm going to keep trying with
that. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.